you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Okay, welcome to the show, Believe You Me podcast. Apologies for not being on our scheduled day of Monday yesterday. I could have mustered up, Lewis. I could have done it. I actually said. But then I reached out to you. I'm like, oh, I feel a little shitty. Can we do tomorrow? And you're like, well, I'm stuck in Texas as well and snowed in and snowed under. And by all accounts, you're still snowed in. I've tried to check on your well-being. I've tried to be a good friend. I've tried to, you know, just find out if you're alive, if you're well. And every time I was like, save it for the show. I said, how are you doing? Save it for the show. I'm like, did you get food? Save it for the show. I'm like, well, fuck off then. I'm not going to talk to you. But now we are in the show. So whatever you had saved up, I hope it's good. Go. The floor
is yours. Well, it's not that I had it saved up. We get on the – here's the thing. Let's pull the curtain aside a little bit. Let's pull the curtain aside for the fan base.
There's nothing to pull back. It's literally what I just said, but please, come on.
Before we go on the show, we have like a 5-10 minutes. We do our ad reads. We talk shit for just a minute or two. But sometimes Bisping will talk to me about exactly what we're about to talk about on the show. So that's why I say save it for the show. I want to have an organic conversation, and I don't want to just repeat some shit that you already heard a minute ago.
Yeah, I know. I'm just busting your balls. So without further ado, before wasting more time, I'm pulling back more curtains and explaining stuff that is very, very obvious. Please, we're in the show. Explain it for the love of God. Why the fuck are you there with a coffee machine in the background? You're not in the studios. You're not at home. What are you doing?
I'm stuck in fucking Texas. I'm stuck in Texas. Now, here's what's going on here. They are having what I would describe as a rainy, cold day. That's what's going on in Texas. A little bit of rain, a little bit of freezing temperatures, and the entire state is shut down. If I don't know if you saw the news, in Dallas, there was 133 car pileup.
Yeah, that was a few days ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that's when the storm started coming in. So it's been a cold front? Like a slow cold front overtaking Texas over the past few days. But what the problem with Texas is, since they never deal with this type of weather, they never deal with freezing rain, ice, even a little bit of snow, they don't have any salt. They don't have any of the plows. They don't have any of the infrastructure to deal with freezing rain and snow. So everything is shut down. There's no restaurants. There's no malls. There's no stores. There's literally nothing to do. I've been eating food out of vending machines for the past 2 days.
Only Luis J. Gomez would find it as another opportunity to brag how good New York is as opposed to fucking Texas. Listen, people, places get cold sometimes. People have problems. Pipes burst. Cars crash. Power gets cut off, which is very fucking annoying. But, I'm sure that's happened in New York before, Luis. You know what I mean? Don't stand and, you know, we can find bagels. We can find spaghetti. We can find prosciutto. And we can also find bad weather all over the world, okay? Not just only in New York, but I'm sorry that you're dealing with that. How long do you think you're going to be trapped down there?
I was supposed to come home today. I was supposed to drive from Houston to Austin on Monday and then fly home today. I couldn't get a flight out till Thursday. So now I'm here. And look, my girlfriend's here. So I was like, you know what? We could use it as a little vacation. Take a couple extra days. Why not?
Oh, sounds like a lovely vacation.
I know, but that's the problem.
Trapped in a hotel room, no food, and it's freezing cold outside and no power. You're lucky that you have power, because I did see on the news this morning, a lot of places don't. Callum's girlfriend, she's from Dallas, and I saw on their Facebook, her mother's Facebook, they've got no power at the house. So I guess you're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, I'm staying in a decent hotel. It's okay. But I really don't know what to do. I'm starting to lose my mind slowly but surely. Like I've keep on ordering like Uber Eats, and they keep on canceling it after I put the order in. I think I finally got through. And yeah, Ubers are like 30 minutes to get an Uber anywhere. I didn't rent a car.
What is the airline saying?
What do you mean?
No, in terms of flying back. So I'm assuming you can't fly back because planes are grounded right now.
No, I don't think that they're grounded. I think that everything got pushed back and everyone just kept on rebooking and rebooking.
Oh, so it's just like a scheduling and they're all backed up and built up. But why would they do that if the planes didn't get canceled?
Well, I don't know. Well, I'm assuming for a couple of days they did. It was like iced over or whatever.
Yeah.
So now I'm just sort of fucked. But, you know, it's fine. I had some tuna fish. This was a pretty good meal, actually. It was tuna fish in a bag and they give you a little packet of mayo with some Ritz crackers on the side.
That's one of the things I hate about the fucking lockdown situation. Or not the lockdown, the COVID, whatever you want to call it. When you ask for some sauce, they give you a sachet. When you ask for salt and pepper in a restaurant, they give you a salt and pepper sachet. I can't wait for the civilized times where I can ask for some salt and pepper and get given a salt and pepper shaker. I don't believe that, and we're not going to get into this whole thing, but the restaurants are just taking in this as an opportunity to do less. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think so.
You're fucking right. They're like, oh, it's fine. Just serve it in a fucking... Like the other day, I got some food and they just gave it to us in like our to-go boxes. They could have served it on a plate. They could have brought us now a knife and fork. Explain to me how that's different. You know what I mean? But still, as I say, whatever. I don't want to get into it all. I'm sorry you're going to deal with that, Lewis. Sorry you're snowing in and freezing your balls off.
Starbucks, they do this thing now. And it has to be, because it's every single Starbucks. If you order a coffee and then you say, all right, let me get a sweet and low on the side or a Splenda on the side, they give you the Splenda. And then you have to be like, can I also have the little wooden stirring stick as well, please? Can I have that? And they go, oh, yeah, cool. Like, they make you ask for it now. And I think, like, company-wide, they were like, we need to save some money and cut some costs somewhere. So let's stop giving out the stirring sticks with every, because it's every Starbucks.
No. Please, Lewis, Starbucks, and I'm not trying to argue with you, but I got to pull you on this. Starbucks is a hugely successful corporation. You think that their strategy to save money is by taking away the little tiny pieces of balsa wood or tiny pieces of very, very cheap to manufacture millions of these, you think that's the strategy to save money? Because it, come on.
Well, let's say it's a half a penny for each of those, right? How many of those per day nation worldwide are they giving out? It probably is an insane amount.
No. They charge. I was in an airport recently and I got a coffee and I think a bottle of water and it cost me $13. Okay. They're making enough on their fucking coffee to give you, to be able to pay for the little stirry things. You know what I mean?
Boy.
I hear what you say. It's a pain in the ass, but I doubt they're doing that to save money.
They look at profits and losses from year to year. And I guarantee you this past year was one of their worst years in history. And they're trying to make it up somehow. I remember when McDonald's years ago, they changed it from the double cheeseburger to the McDouble. Do you know what the difference was between the two cheeseburgers? It's such a fat guy piece of history.
I was going to say, unfortunately, I don't monitor the menu at McDonald's. I don't carefully, closely keep up to date with it and the reasons why they change it and the calorie content and what they're saving and this and that. And fuck me, bring back the McRib. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those guys, but please.
Harrington in the chat answered the question, by the way.
Oh, of course he did. One piece of cheese.
He knew exactly when they changed it. Piece of cheese cost them like 3 cents, right? And they made millions of dollars up in the difference just by changing it from the double cheeseburger to the McDouble. So I'm just saying it's not that crazy that a corporation would look at that sort of volume.
I think it is.
Why is it company-wide then? Why do they make you ask for the stirry thing in every single Starbucks in every area of the country? That's crazy.
Because it's some weird COVID thing, as I just said with the restaurants. You know what I mean? They don't want to touch things. They don't want to give them to you. I don't know how that helps, because if you just put 1,000 of them or 100 of them, whatever number you want, in a tub and you just grab one, maybe I guess you could touch a few of them. I don't know. But I doubt they're doing it to save money. As I say, well, they charge $8 for a fucking cup of coffee. It does not cost $8 to produce a cup of coffee.
Well, speaking of, they just started. When I got to Texas, this is the first time that I've seen the little kiosk area with like the sugar packets and the stirs. They have that back out, because every other area that I've been to in the country, you had to ask for all that stuff. They didn't have it out exactly for that. I think that exact reason, because they didn't want people's like fingers contaminating it and then going back in. But it was kind of nice.
Screw Starbucks anyway. Starbucks is awful. It's horrible. I don't like it. I don't. Oh, no. The coffee's terrible. The coffee is not good. It's not good coffee. In fact, in Australia, Starbucks doesn't really exist because they're coffee snobs and it's just not good enough. And it never took off. I think in Canada as well, it's only Tim Hortons. I saw something on, what is it called? Jeopardy. Jeopardy. I was watching Jeopardy.
How are we supposed to get that? You were like,
No, come on. What was the name of the game show? I'm trying to think of the game show. And it was just on in the background. And I heard somebody say, which location did Starbucks spend hundreds of millions of dollars on trying to penetrate the market and failed? And it was Canada and Australia. Australia doesn't like it. Starbucks is crap. But anyway, people aren't here to hear us talk about the pros and cons of Starbucks, the pros and cons of this little wooden stirry thing that we don't even know what they're called. Here to talk, us talk about, the stirrer.
A stirrer. I think the name would be a stirrer, the technical name.
All right. Well, I apologize for dishonoring the stirrers of the world. When are you coming home? Thursday.
I'll be home on time for the show. Yeah, I land at like 1 p.m. Oh, yeah, it's booked. I'm ready to go.
Oh, nice, nice.
Nothing could possibly go wrong at this point. Oh, let me tell you. Oh, Bisping, you would have lost your fucking mind last night.
Go on.
So we leave our, we're sitting at the last night we were in Houston, they put us up a pretty shitty hotel, Club Quarters. I don't know if you've ever been, but they're really tiny, like little fucking rooms. They're for like airline, you know, personnel, right?
Well, did the hotel, sorry, pardon me, the airport put you there?
The Comedy Club.
Oh, the Comedy Club. Okay.
Comedy Club. So we, on Monday when we got up, we're like, we can't stay here. This is fucking crazy. Let's go on Airbnb because every hotel was booked on Monday because all the flights were canceled. So we go on Airbnb. And we get a pretty decent place. We show up to the actual place and nothing is cleaned. It still has the garbage from the last person because the people to clean the place couldn't actually get there. So there's garbage in all the, you know, the bathroom, the kitchen, the bed is unmade. All the towels are dirty. They're in the washing machine. There's nothing. We're fucking furious. But the people, we start arguing back and forth. But either way, we're like, fuck, we can't book another Airbnb now. It's like 9 o'clock at night. So we change the sheets. We go to bed at 3:30 in the morning. Fire alarm starts going off, not just in the apartment, but the whole building. The whole building starts evacuating. This 3:30 in the morning, it's the coldest day in history. It's 17 degrees outside in Texas. Day in Texas history.
I have been there in that situation in Texas. I was going to say not in Texas, in Austin, Texas. Yeah, I was filming a movie in 2009. Precisely that happened. Continue.
So it's 17 degrees and we see everyone going out and my chick's like, what are we gonna do? I was like, I'm not going outside. I don't care. We don't have a car to go sit in. I'm not standing outside to wait to see what happens. I would rather burn to death than stand outside in the freezing cold 17 degree weather. So we just stayed.
Yeah.
We just stayed and it blasted off for like 40 minutes straight. And then eventually it just went off and we watched everyone come back inside. And
okay. Let me say, you wouldn't rather burn to death.
I would rather burn to death.
No, you wouldn't. Don't call me a liar.
I'm not calling you a liar.
I'm correcting you on misstating your point. Okay?
It's a lie.
No, it's not. It's a lie. You just got a little confused for a second. There's no way. Burn me to death rather than standing outside. What you meant was, I'm gonna run the risk because I don't think there's a real fire. I think maybe the alarm just went off for some whatever reason. Maybe it's a drill. Maybe some drunk asshole broke it. Who knows? Maybe there's a little chip pan fire in the kitchen downstairs. They're gonna put it out. It'll be fine. We're not going to go outside. I've been there many times. Me and my mate Jack over in Austin, Texas. Same thing. Middle of the night, that went off. I was like, fuck that. No way.
Another time, you didn't go out?
No. I'm like, listen, there's a little window there. If I start smelling smoke, yeah, and I feel then okay, then I'll disappear. It happened once at a UFC event in Tampa, Florida. Same thing. I was like, yeah, now I'm staying. And then another time, this would be annoying. UFC London was on, and in the middle of the night, for all the fighters that were fighting the next day at the fighter hotel, the fire alarm went off. And this is early, I think it was February in England. So it's cold. It's February now. You're freezing cold. Middle of the night. They're all standing there with those like foil blankets around them. All the fighters and they're fighting the next day. I did feel sorry for them as I looked out of my window and didn't go downstairs. I thought, what are you doing? You're fighting tomorrow. Why? I'm not doing anything. I'm just here to like talk with Karen Bryant afterwards. You're fighting. I'm laying in bed looking and going, you fools. They were fine. They were following the rules. They're good law-abiding citizens. But yeah, There you go.
That's so funny. Like, me and you are the same exact guy in that regard. There's no fucking way. I wouldn't rather burn to death.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not the same guy. I would not rather burn to death, but I'll make an educated, I'll take my position when things progress a little bit. You're also get out.
The problem, though, when it's too late, it's too late. When it's too late, you're going to burn to death. At the point where you go, oh, shit, you know what? I really got to go.
There's a window. I was one floor up. There's a window there. I'll take a chair. I'll smash the window, and out I go. Boom.
Fourth floor I was on.
I thought you were a real ass guy. I thought you were a badass, Lewis. Fourth floor, that's nothing for a guy like you. Come on, the athleticism that you're building, the instincts, the reflexes that you have, you can fucking break fall off there, you know, roll and eat a sandwich at the same time while stirring your coffee and not spill a fucking drop. Come on, don't sell yourself short.
Do you know how many times that I've rolled my ankle just walking down the street, much less jumping out of a fourth floor window? I mean, I'll just be walking and they're like, and I fall down on the floor, and that's just the plight of the fat, clumsy guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I seem to hurt my ankles every time I go for a run. I think I might have an issue.
Okay, we must thank Blue Blocks for supporting today's show. That's BLUBLOX. Blue Blocks makes really incredible, stylish, blue light blocking sunglasses. And they're also, these are, I'm not even wearing sunglasses. These are like reader glasses. So if you're on your cell phone a lot, which we all are, if you're on a tablet, watching a lot of TV, there's harmful blue lights that could fuck with the way you sleep. They could strain your eyes. You could have many, many issues because of these harmful blue lights. And Blue Blocks is the best place to go grab sunglasses or protective gear to block these harmful blue lights.
Yeah, and it's not only the Blue Blocks and the rather stylish ones that you're wearing. They do prescription frames as well. There's over 40 styles to choose from. So check out blueblocks.com because you will find something that will fit your face and make you feel fantastic, look sexy, but also save you from that troublesome blue light. It will stop you sleeping at night. It will give you headaches and a few other things as well. Listen, during this pandemic, everybody's been at home. We're all looking at our screens far too much, whether it's a phone, an iPad, a computer screen, even a TV. For crying out loud, we are absorbing too much of this blue light, and that's what Blue Blocks do. Basically, in a nutshell, you will sleep better, you will get rid of those headaches, and you'll look bloody good. Now, at the end of the day, you go to the website, that's blueblocks.com, check them out. And as you see, I'm having a little tribute to Luis J. Gomez here with his glass style, but we have a tremendous offer. We're going to knock 15% off if you use the code BISPING. Go to blueblocks.com, use the code BISPING, get rid of that blue light. Get rid of the headaches. When you lie in bed at night and you're thinking, why can't I sleep? You know, I haven't had caffeine. I'm pretty tired. I should be falling asleep. It is probably the blue light that you are subconsciously absorbing pretty much all day. Because I would say that, you know, most people are staring at screens for the most part of the day. Everyone's looking at their phone. So anyway, one more time, blueblocks.com. Check them out. They've got very, very cool styles. Use the code BISPING. You'll get 15% off. BISPING, blueblocks.com. Boom. But anyway, UFC 258 at the weekend, we saw an incredibly dominant performance from Kamaru Usman. We'll go through the card, I guess. But
I wouldn't call it dominant. Would you call it dominant?
It was dominant when it went on, but we'll work our way up to that. We'll start. That's like, you know, the main event. Let's hold that. That's the piece de resistance.
Full disclosure, Harrington's going to have to jump in on a lot of this because I only got to see the main event. I was traveling and I had a show the night of the event.
Yep. No, it's okay. It's what we've come to expect, Lewis. You know, you're out. You work Saturday nights. I get it. Well, the first one I want to talk about was, who was it? Rodolfo Vieira. Who did he fight again? Fuck, Harrington, my mind's gone blank. Maybe I should look at the notes. That'll help. Good event, though. Good fight card. I know a lot of people were talking shit about, it wasn't the most star-studded card, but I got to say it absolutely delivered. Oh, Fluffy Hernandez. Fluffy Hernandez was fighting Rodolfo Vieira. And Rodolfo Vieira, if you don't know, his jiu-jitsu credentials are absolutely through the roof. One of the best, I don't know if one of the best to ever do it, but certainly has a massive amount of hype surrounding his name in terms of jiu-jitsu, a 7-time world champion. And I commentated his first fight on the UFC, and the guy looked like the fucking real deal. Harrington, can you?
I said, Harrington, you can come on.
Oh, sorry, right, yeah. No, you're good now. I got it. You could have come on 30 seconds ago, but I couldn't remember the name. But you're fine. You can fuck off now. But Rodolfo Vieira, yeah, listen, he looked the package. Saturday night, he was fighting Fluffy Hernandez. He's a great fighter. He brings it. He's tough every time. But I thought, oh, poor Fluffy. And I think, don't quote me on this, I think he might have lost his last two. And I was very I was concerned for the guy because I like this Fluffy Hernandez. He's a nice guy. He is, and I wish him all the best. And I thought, man, this is a bad matchup. And if you see Rodolfo Vieira, he's absolutely jacked. But, Lewis, this goes into what I always say to you and to anybody, cardio, conditioning is the most important factor in any fight because the fight started, he went out and he took him down pretty much straight away. Fluffy had some really good defense. You know, he got out of a couple of scary situations when you've got that caliber of a jiu-jitsu guy on top of you. And then what happened? He got tired. Rodolfo got tired. He was breathing out of his ass. He's got so much muscle. Obviously, that takes a lot of blood and a lot of oxygen to feed those muscles. And he was trying to get the finish, you know, so aggressively. So he put a lot of effort in. The second round, he was absolutely exhausted. And guess what? It was Fluffy Hernandez that went out there and got a fucking submission over the 7 times world jiu-jitsu champion. And never, ever would that ever happen if the guy didn't get tired. And by the way, I'm not taking away from his win. You know, I'm not discrediting his win. Of course, solid win, excellent defense. The guy got tired and he fucked him up and made him pay the price. But again, it just shows how important conditioning is in any kind of athletic contest and certainly a mixed martial arts fight. Harrington, what have you got to say?
I specifically wanted
hold
to
hold on. The mustache. Mm-hmm. Whoa, I'm seeing this for the first time. Please tell me the inspiration behind this.
I grew a chin finally. You know, I mean, it's been I've been working at Gas Digital here since 2016, and I've never this is as defined a jawline as I've ever had. So I wanted to see what it looked like without the beard for once.
I mean, I wouldn't call it a chin or a jawline. I'd say you've shaved, but what is it, Charlie Chaplin? It's halfway to a Hitler mustache. But still, all right. Anyway, welcome to the show. What were you gonna say?
So I wanted to ask you this because it looked to me like Hernandez could have had the finish in the first round if he just applied ground and pound, but he kept working on the submission. My question for you, did it seem to you like he was going for the submission against somebody whose nickname is the Black Belt Hunter or somebody who's so decorated in BJJ to try to make his name getting that submission rather than just taking the TKO win?
I don't know if he was necessarily trying to make a point like that. And he was forced into that style of fight by Rodolfo Vieira, who forced the takedown. But you're right, he was trying to get the submission. I was kind of surprised when he was cranking on the neck and going for it like that. Because my advice, for the most part, would have been escape, abort, get away from the fence. If you're on the floor, just get up, don't play those games. But he felt the momentum turning. So well done, well done. So when you have your fight, Lewis, you've got to be in the best shape possible, buddy. Otherwise, you're gonna get tired, dude.
Question, because you were known as the, you know, one of the best, having some of the best cardio in mixed martial arts in the UFC. It was widely known as that. That was sort of a thing that they talked about all the time with you. When was the most tired you've ever been in a fight?
Most tired. I mean, I've told the story before about that kickboxing fight when that's when I learned my lesson. For those that haven't, I got battered. I won 4 rounds and I got battered for 4 rounds and it was because of my conditioning. But in the UFC, the most tired, don't think I ever really got tired in the UFC fight because I'd learned my lesson and it meant so much to me, you know, and I always say, if you're going to fight, you got to turn them on shape and in weight. You know, if you're not doing that, then you're not a professional. But of course, that sounds like that isn't an answer. Most tired I ever got. Nothing stands out. I know.
Think of your 5-round fights where you're like beating. I mean, the Anderson Silva fight.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. I don't remember really feeling because I always went in prepared. I mean, of course, yeah. I got tired. I'm not going to say I didn't. That would be a lie and that would be ignorant. But I don't remember a specific time where there was that one fight. Of course, in the 5th round, when you're going for it, you're all getting tired. You're supposed to be getting tired. If you're not tired, then you're not emptying the tank, as they say. But yeah, there you go. All right. Kelvin Gastelum got a good win. Ricky Simon defeated Brian Kelly. Brian Kelleher, business is booming. Ricky Simon beat Brian Kelleher. Have you seen this about Miley Cyrus, Lewis?
No, what is it?
No. It's not much. Afterwards, he did a very, very good post-fight interview. And then afterwards, he said, okay, I've got a call out. And Rogan was like, oh, sure, yeah, go ahead. And he called out Miley Cyrus. You know, it was a little lame or whatever. He's like, Miley Cyrus, will you be my Valentine? And Miley Cyrus responded on Twitter.
What'd she say?
Which is really cool of her. Do you know what I mean? I was like, yeah, she just gets cooler and cooler. She's come a long way from those teeny bopper days. But what was the name? Hannah Montana? No, it wasn't Hannah Montana.
Was she
Hannah Montana?
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter used to like Hannah Montana. So she's come a long way since then, certainly in some of her music videos. Holy shit. But she responded, I think it was, if you get MC you know, shaved into your chest hair, then we got a deal or something like that. Am I missing anything there, Harrington?
Yeah, shave an MC into your chest hair, and I am yours. Happy V-Day and congrats, my love.
It was Julian Marquez. He went in on the whole post-fight interview saying that he grew up watching Hannah Montana. He saw her like as a teen star into the woman that she is today. She's the same age as him. So, you know, it's obviously his crush.
All those people out there that grew up on Hannah Montana, like yourself, Harrington, there is hope for you. And when you say Julian, coming from Cuba, would it not be Julian? I mean, what is the correct terminology?
Oh, I suppose you're correct there.
Is it? Do they pronounce the J like an H as well, or is it just the
R? I don't know. You're the Latino here, Luis.
Whoa, that was very racist the way that you did that.
That's what you said, Latino.
Do I ever say that? Latino.
Why is that racist? I'm just saying, when I see on TV, Latino community.
That's like me being like, you're the Brett, mate. You're a British guy, aren't you, mate?
You do that.
I do that all the time.
All the time.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, you do it every time you impersonate me. That's what you do.
Hello, hello. My name's Michael Bisping.
Kelvin Gastelum got back to winning ways, defeating Ian Heinisch. A lot of good wrestling on display from Kelvin Gastelum there. So well done. All right. Co-main, Alexa Grasso. Do you see the co-main, Luis?
I just saw highlights of it, okay. But I know that I think that we should give Harrington his own Macy Barber breakdown. Anytime there's Macy Barber in the news, we should have an intro for it. It's the Mike Harrington Macy Barber breakdown, and maybe one day Macy Barber will agree to be your Valentine, Harrington.
Harrington, you love Macy Barber. Please talk us through what the attraction is.
I mean,
she's a good, you know, great fighter, all that stuff. Sorry, I made it sound bad, but please, you know, what is it specifically that she does for you?
Wait, you're talking about the physical attraction? I don't know. I just think she's a very, very cute girl. I like everything about her. She's got a very plucky spirit.
You continuously try and get her on here. You put her up for the best looking woman of in the mm-hmm. UFC roster and things like that. Macy Barber is never far away from your thoughts. No. But unfortunately, she was far away from the scorecards on Saturday night. And I think Alexa Grasso. See, oh, you like that? Grasso, was she an underdog going into that one? Or was... what's her face? Macy Barber.
Yeah, Grasso was a slight underdog in that fight. Unfortunately, she was also very far away from her opponent while she was throwing ridiculous high kicks.
It wasn't just high kicks. It was jabs and stuff like that. And I'm glad you mentioned this because I did want to talk about this. Lewis, for your benefit, when she was way away from her opponent, I'm talking like 10 feet away, she's going, and she's throwing jabs and she's throwing kicks and she's doing head movement and things like that. And this isn't an attack on Macy Barber because a lot of men fighters do it as well. A lot of fighters in general, men, male or female, they do that from a distance. They're throwing punches and they're doing head movement. It's absolutely pointless. You don't do it from that far away. All you're doing there is one, making yourself look stupid to people like me. And secondly, wasting energy. You're wasting energy. Head movement is for when you're in striking range. Other than that, you're just like, it's like you're shadow boxing in front of a mirror. And the jabs and the feints and stuff like that, you've got to be close enough that it can actually be a threat for them to react. You know, now, of course, it's a high-pressure situation and she's a young girl and she's trying to do something, but she's still learning on the job to a certain degree. So I'm not talking shit about her too much, but it's just something that you do see a lot of younger novice fighters doing.
Well, thirdly, also, Mike, it hurts her on a statistical point of view because I'm looking at the post-fight statistics now. And, you know, while she did land technically more than Grasso, 40 significant strikes to 38, she threw 152 strikes to get there. And a lot of those were nowhere near where she could have landed. I mean, it drops her significant strike percentage down to just 26% effectively in that fight. That hurts you on the looking at it as a fan going into your next fight.
Yeah, that's a good point, but I don't know. And Lewis, give your opinion here, and Harrington, of course. What do you think, though? Do you really think that those strikes from a distance, do you think they're being counted as missed strikes?
Oh, I think they're being counted, for sure. Why not? If you put your arm out there, you throw a kick, even though it's not close, but that's without a doubt.
It's not a strike attempt. I don't think Macy Barber in any world, in any kind of reality, thought that jab from 10 feet away was going to land. She's just like getting used. She's settling her nerves. She's just pumping some jabs out there, things like that. But yeah, I mean, as you say, Harrington, good point. That never even occurred to me at all.
Yeah. I don't know if the fans are looking at the percentage landed in the last fight going into the next one, being like, you know what? She only landed 22% in her last fight. I'm not that excited on this one.
Well, I will tell you this, though. Heading into this fight, I was most excited based on the striking numbers for both of these
ladies. You're a fucking pervert.
for fucking Macy Barber.
Yeah, we don't want to hear what you're most excited about, you creep. Okay.
I thought that these two were going to be in a phone booth striking with each other. And
You fucking horny old man. Jesus Christ.
A bit of respect for these female competitors. They're going out there. They're laying it all on the line. They're training just as hard as the men. They need their respect. Stop talking about them and sexualizing them as objects
in
and materials.
In a phone booth. Jesus Christ, Harrington.
Not even in a nice hotel like where Lewis is staying. In a phone booth. I mean, come on.
Shoving them in a bathroom stall at a Denny's. You make me sick.
It did frustrate me, though, because that third round, Mike, tell me if I'm wrong on this one. That Macy Barber that came out in the third round that looked like she was close to getting a finish against Grasso and was using her size and, you know, the work rate to push the pace there. That's the Macy Barber I expected to see for all 15 minutes. And that's the Barber who I think does have, you know, aspirations of being a top five fighter in the flyweight division.
Okay, well, in a moment, I'm going to shift to Alexa Grasso because it's her night, because she did win the fight. And even though you want to swing off Macy Barber's hypothetical, imaginary, what's the word I'm looking for? Theoretical nuts? Whatever, you're swinging off them. Yeah, you're right. In the third round, she came out very, very aggressive, swinging everything into every shot. And it was impressive to see that she wanted it so badly. You know what I'm saying? Because... you know, she realized she was down and she was behind and she needed to do something to get the win. But still, Alexa Grasso, she's so cool, calm and collected in there. Doesn't show any emotion. She's awesome. I'm a big, big fan of her, to be honest. She's a great fighter. She's got excellent boxing. DC actually just came out and says that hands down, he thinks she's the best female boxer in the UFC. The takedown defense stood up because Macy, obviously being, you could see she was visibly a much bigger girl. She was trying to get it down, and Alexa was able to keep it on the feet. And when they did hit the ground, she fucking threw out some slick jujitsu very, very quickly. I think she hit a really good sweep and she threatened with a submission. And then on the feet, she landed some beautiful shots. Very, very good. Excellent performance.
Yeah, I mean, that triangle she had from the bottom was absolutely incredible. That sweep to end the second round, clearly, you know, putting a stamp on that. Macy was successful in 3 out of 5 takedown attempts, but as you said, she got absolutely nothing going with those. 2 of those 3 were in the final round, 0 of 1 when they were both dry in the first round. So, yeah, I mean, that tells you Grasso is, you know, she was a win one, lose one fighter, some very close decisions at strawweight, but at, I think, flyweight is a natural weight class for her. She seems like she's going to be a problem there. For sure.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Absolutely. So anyway, that gets us to, and well done, Macy Barber, in a good effort there. And Alexa Grasso, can't wait to see your next fight. Kamaru Usman, Gilbert Burns. Obviously, both guys have been on the show. But I always root for underdogs. And I'm not saying I was rooting for Gilbert. But, he's just such a likable guy. And he's so humble. Yeah. And, you know, you see on Instagram and social media how much he loves his wife and kids. And you kind of want him to go home. But still, so's Kamaru. Kamaru, everything I just said, you can apply that to him. And, you know, Kamaru's actually got a very, very interesting story. Do you know anything about the backstory, Lewis, about Kamaru and his father?
No, not really, no.
Yeah, well, I didn't know much about it until recently. A documentary just came out. It's on Fight Pass. And a buddy of mine, Jared, a Scottish guy, lives out here. He actually made the documentary. And he called me up. We were talking about some other things. And he told me a bit about the story. So he came from Nigeria with his father. And if I get any of this wrong, I apologize to him, his family, and all you people that in the comment section are going to say, no, that's not actually how it happened. But I'm going to give you, it's somewhere close to the truth. No, he came out here with his father, and his father got arrested on some kind of, I think it was fraud. Medical fraud, I think, at work. And I think he got sentenced to like 20 years in prison and obviously grew up without a father for a while. But then throughout his success in the UFC and people hearing about the story, I think this big highfalutin lawyer got involved and was able to get his sentence reduced. And I think he's out now. As I say, I haven't seen the documentary. But still, when you hear that backstory, it's, you know, you kind of root for that guy as well.
Well,
13 years.
Maybe. I don't know. What was he doing? I have no idea. I mean, maybe we just got a hardened criminal out on the street early for no reason at all.
No, this is fraud, so no one died, okay? And well, I'm talking about from Kamaru's perspective. Imagine little baby James. You know what I mean? Lewis is out there doing your shenanigans, what you do. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do, but I'm going to assume what you do. Some of it's illegal. Let's just say
medical fraud, it is definitely a hotel gynecologist, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Pretending to be one. Yeah, you know what I mean? We all make mistakes. I don't know what his mistake was. Maybe it was big. Maybe it was bad and he deserved to be punished. But still, I'm talking about the poor little Kamaru, buddy. Poor little Kamaru and his dad taken away. I'm rooting for Kamaru because of his you know, what Devil he had to go there? Through as a child. Devils, please.
Well, so right here, Harrington fact-checking. He worked in pharmaceuticals. He was convicted on 14 federal charges of false claims made to an ambulance company. That doesn't really clear it up too much. Maybe try to get a little more information, Harrington, and come on and let us know.
We're not debating whether or not he deserved the sentence. We're here to talk about
it. I'm not saying we can talk about what, you know, what happened, though. I mean, that's the reality of...
Oh, yeah. No, you know, of course we can.
But devil's advocate, Kamaru probably wouldn't be UFC champion today had his dad not went to jail.
Everything happens for a reason, and it defines who you are. I don't know if everything does happen for a reason. It's a nice saying, but I understand the point that you're saying because, yeah, you know, adversity, struggles, hardship in life, you know, made him the man that he is today. And because of all those life lessons and what he went through, he became UFC champion of the world and a bloody good one at that. Listen, you know, all that adversity made him the man that he is today. And that's what I say as well. You know, Dad, if you're listening, thank you for beating the fuck out of us every day because it made me get that thing behind me. But seriously, though, it is part of the path. Anyway, he looked fucking sensational Saturday night. Not in the first round. First round, I thought he was going to get knocked out pretty quickly. But Lewis, go ahead. Give me your thoughts.
Well, yeah, it was all Gil Burns in the first round. And
Gil Burns. I love Gil Burns. You shortened it. Why have three syllables when you can have two? Gilbert Burns or just Gil Burns? I like it.
Yeah, dude. He looked really great. And to be honest with you, I thought he was going to knock him out. He landed some heavy, heavy shots. You were talking about feints earlier. He was using feints really, really well. And you said something, and it's kind of funny because you've been so on point with your calling of these fights before they happen. You said the speed advantage is going to go to Gilbert Burns, where the power advantage is going to go to Usman. And I think that was sort of the story of not only the first round, but the entire fight.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, even Gilbert said himself afterwards he was trying to go out there and kill him in the first round. And Kamaru said as well that often that's how their sparring sessions would go. He said, if you could have seen us spar together the first round, Gilbert always did really well. Then, of course, as it went on, Kamaru started having more success. Obviously, Gilbert remembered that. He was aware of that. And you would be. If that's what history taught you, then you'd go for that knockout nice and quick. And yeah, to your point, I was sitting there in bed, watching in bed. That's a nice experience, by the way. Watching the pay-per-view in bed. Never done that one before. It's good. I like it. I recommend it highly. It's very comfortable. But I was letting
it go. So I see you're not drinking anymore.
No, I'm not. I've given up. I have. I didn't drink all weekend. Was out there fishing at the weekend like a good little boy. No, Gil, I thought he was going to knock him out. I'm like, holy shit, this is incredible because everybody knows Gilbert's an awesome champion. Kamaru's an awesome champion. And he's going to go out there, finish him in that kind of style. And then I got mad. And then I got very annoyed at Gilbert. I got mad. I was shouting at the screen. And again, may the best man win. But Gilbert Burns, after what he went through and all the training, and he had such a great path to actually be in the position to challenge for the title. At no point in the mind of Gilbert Burns, in no point in the mind of any of his coaches, was the game plan, okay, go out there, hit him with a few shots, and then I want you to lie on the floor for the rest of the round, right? That wasn't the game plan, okay? You can get back up. In those situations, I used to always get back up. It's very simple. And yeah, okay, you might get a little shitty shot, but you're going to get back to your feet. Because guess what? The reality is you're going to eat shots anyway. Because there's a guy standing over you and you're going to get punched in your face. Now, of course, Gilbert wanted to play the jiu-jitsu game. Well, of course, he has a massive advantage there. And that advantage was apparent to Usman because Usman didn't play that game in the slightest. Did not for a second entertain stepping into the guard or playing any of that game. He was like, nah, fuck that. But he stood over him and landed some really good shots. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing, Gilbert? Get up. Get up. This was not the plan.
Especially because he was landing so heavily. It wasn't like he was lacking in the striking department. He was winning early in the fight.
Get up. What are you doing? I was so fucking annoyed with him. Only because, listen, as I say, best made the best man win. But I was like, you are throwing this away. I'm not talking shit. It's easy to say from your couch, be the backseat driver, all that type of thing. But still, I was led there thinking, wow, I bet his coaches are mad. He's going to be mad. Everyone around him was probably saying, get the fuck up. He was hoping he would come down. But anyway, round two. Was it round two? Did he get the finish or three? I think it was three.
Very early in the third round.
Yeah, the jab of Usman just looks
God damn, dude. It looks so powerful.
Yeah, no. And see, that's the thing. People underestimate the jab. But when you think about the jab, certainly with 4-ounce gloves on, 4-ounce gloves, you can hurt people with the jab. You can put a tremendous amount of power into a jab if you throw it properly. I mean, there's so many different ways to throw a jab. You know, you can have just a regular jab. You can have a defensive jab. You can have a jab where you step away, like a retreating jab. You can have an advancing jab where you step in with the lead leg and you really turn the fist and you really fucking go for it. I mean, I'm left-handed, so it's my dominant hand, but I used to have still not bad, but a very, very powerful jab. And Usman, of course, and Trevor Whitman in the corner identified that as well. Said, come on, work behind that jab. And of course, fucking hell, man, that jab dropped him. I think that was the beginning of the end sequence, right? Jesus Christ, can't talk there.
Yeah,
he dropped him with a jab and then followed up through the legs.
He dropped him
in
the second as well with a jab, if I'm not mistaken. But it was a really nasty jab. He seemed like he timed it really well. Just the whatever the distance was, it hit him like a straight versus the jab. I know that they were talking about that as well. Trevor Whitman focusing specifically on Usman's jab, and that's another thing that you called going into this fight. Trevor Whitman being in Usman's corner was just a really, really big advantage to have because he's such an incredible coach. And then, once he went to the ground, that nasty, vicious ground and pound, really, really powerful.
Can I ask you to stop rotating side to side? Because it's like you're in a fucking a vortex. whoa, you're rotating.
Focusing in and out as
I'm
well.
I'm not telling you how to sit or what to do, but please, for the love of fucking God, please stop swiveling. Lewis said he's bloody swiveling. I say it all the
please
time.
Please stop the goddamn hammering. What is that from?
I have no idea.
First person to write it in the comments on YouTube, I will.
Does it get a pair of Sanibel gloves?
Although no, it's not going to be Sanibel gloves. We'll send you a Believe You Me mug. We got
you. We're working on the Sanibel gloves. We are, actually. So the jab, Lewis, get into the – you got to drill the jab. The jab is the key to the door for everything. I mean, we saw that. We saw that Gilbert had the faster hands. We saw that he had the more power in the hands. But the jab can, you know, nullify everything. Certainly if you've got the reach advantage, a good jab – and that's pretty much all Kamaru threw. There was a couple of kicks. There was a few right hands. But it was the jab that really did the damage, you know. And as I say, you got to drill that jab. And another good little habit to get into when I'm hitting the bag or I'm hitting the pads, boom, 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 boom. When I'm done, you step away. Always finish with a jab. Why is that? Well, because if anyone that's worth their salt, if you're fighting them and you go in and you land the combination, when you step away, they're going to chase you. They're going to come after you. But if you step back and boom, you just throw that jab out there, it's going to stop them in the tracks. They're not going to chase you. They're not going to come after you because they're still eating shots. So it's just a really good habit to get into. So, you know, jabs, there you go, man. There you go. Underrated in MMA, but it won the title.
All day long. Now, now that the fight is over, it's sort of back to the drawing board for Gilbert Burns. I know that Kamaru Usman, he expressed interest in rematching Jorge Masvidal, which is kind of interesting.
I mean, I'm not surprised. You know, Kamaru, he's on a cut of the pay-per-view. He wants those big fights. The fight against Masvidal was 1.3 million buys. And, you know, I'm not saying this.
That was short notice as well, by the way.
Well, apparently it was short notice. He's saying 6 days. Apparently some people saying it wasn't that, but whatever. So Kamaru wants to put all those, you know, those excuses. He wants to get those out the window and say, all right, well, fuck it. Let's fight at a full camp.
But what I was saying with short notice, even regarding to just for even forget Masvidal's performance, I'm saying the fact that this old 1.3 in 6 days promotion is massive. If they actually had a weeks and weeks to promote it, all the media tours, all the other bullshit, plus it's a rematch, you would assume that this one's going to sell even better.
Yeah, I mean, that is logical. That is logical thinking. But I'm also wondering if, because that was the first big pay-per-view after those three events that they did in Jacksonville, remember? This is before they were doing events every week at the Apex. You know, So there was a little bit of an absence of action. So I'm sure that helped, but I'm sure Masvidal stepping in at the last minute like that, that's just sexy. It gets people's, you know, it gets them going like, oh, shit, this is exciting. He's stepping in. He's flying over to the other side of the world on 6 days' notice. Let's watch this. Remember, he was coming off the back of knocking out Nate Diaz, Ben Askren in 5 seconds, and a devastating knockout to our friend Darren Till. So, yeah, listen, I'm all for it. I'd like to see it again. I'd pay to see it again. I really would. And I guess for Masvidal, it gives him a full chance, you know, a proper chance, so to speak. And for Kamaru, it gives him a chance to, take away the perceived excuses of Jorge Masvidal. I saw them going back and forth a little bit on Twitter, talking a little bit of shit. And again, I'm not having to go at Masvidal because we know how that fucking ends if I do. Jesus Christ, I've got the Cuban mafia coming after me. But I saw his manager.
You're in his good graces right now, so don't
worry.
Well,
I might not be after this comment.
Oh, no.
No. Just, I saw some people. What was it? I can't remember the exact back and forth, but I did see, and again, I've settled. Well, I've buried the hatchet. There you go. I buried the hatchet with his manager as well. Not Malky Cow, his brother Abraham. And he was like, hold on. How the fuck are they going to fight in June when they're going to film The Ultimate Fighter in May? Oh, sorry, because it takes 5 or 6 weeks. So they're going to film it in 5, 6 weeks and then fight in June. That just doesn't work. And I see what he's saying there, apart from one thing. That's not how The Ultimate Fighter works. You film The Ultimate Fighter and then they show it on TV, which takes 12 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I film The Ultimate Fighter, like I filmed it in January and it wasn't on until like September.
But it was 5 weeks of filming?
It's five, six weeks of filming.
Okay.
But then when it airs, there's 12. So there's a few weeks of editing or whatever. Then you got 12 weeks of the episodes. And on the final episode, if they were going to do that, you would fight. So at the very least, you're going to have 12 weeks of the live episodes. You see what I'm saying? So I understand them having his fighters back there, but you know, maybe he didn't realize that. And you know, just it wasn't a valid point. That's all. And I think it's just a slip. He probably didn't know that, you know what I mean?
So they are supposed to coach The Ultimate Fighter and then fight at the end of it.
That's what, well, if they're going to do it on the season finale, which to be honest, Kamaru Usman and Masvidal, you're not going to put that on The Ultimate Fighter finale. No disrespect to the show, but that's going to be a big pay-per-view. No,
that's a pay-per-view, of course.
Yeah, it's not a fight night. It's not a fight night. That's a pay-per-view all day. But yeah, do it. I mean, who else is there? There's Leon Edwards. Leon Edwards is out there. And hopefully, Leon, big up. Thursday, I've reached out. I said, come on, Leon, third time's a charm. Because Leon Edwards is out there talking a lot of shit right now. Harrington made me come on and read out some of his tweets or whatever. But Leon Edwards is... I don't know. He's saying Nate Diaz wants to go up to 155. He's saying, well, fight me. Fight me. Come on. And I don't know. Harrington, for the love of God, I'm doing a live show. You have a computer in front of you. What is Leon Edwards saying right now?
All right. So Leon Edwards, because Khamzat Chimaev pulled out of their fight. I think that's the missing piece here. So he's now has an open dance card with no one to fight. He said, Nate just dribbled for an hour about wanting to fight at 170 against winners. Let's see it then. 8-fight win streak, number 3 in the world. Let's see. Let's go if you still think you're a real one. Yeah, I mean, that was pretty strong right there. Nate responded with Leon's head badly photoshopped onto Jeremy Stevens, then asked, who the fuck is this? To which Leon replied, Nate, your Photoshop skills are as bad as your fight record and you use Connor's line, what the fuck? So there's been no, you know, back and forth between Nate and Leon since then. But that seemed to be the end of his call out. Just trying to save that date, which I believe was March 13th for the Khamzat fight.
Leon Edwards is in a weird position.
I feel sorry for Leon Edwards. He keeps getting, well, he's not getting fucked over. Hopefully they get him another opponent. But Dana said they're moving on from the Khamzat fight. But continue with your point.
Well, he just like, he's in a weird position because he's won 8 in a row. He's like, he's just a really, really tough fight, but he doesn't have the marquee name recognition to get one of those huge fights at 170, right? So they're giving Khamzat the opportunity to fight him to sort of pad his record even further. But Leon's in this weird position where he honestly is sort of the dude to beat right now, but there's not much upside in beating him except for the fact that he sort of jumped his position in rankings.
Before you speak there, Khamzat, I don't think they were feeding him to Khamzat to big up.
Not feeding. No, Khamzat. I thought Khamzat was going to lose that fight.
Yeah. No, but yeah. All right. I was just clarifying that point. Harrington, dying, itching to chime in. Better be good.
Well, the other person who Dana White threw out there was Colby Covington. Immediately after the Khamzat news broke, he said, you know, we are
Leon.
For Leon. He said the fight that he thinks makes the most sense is Leon Edwards versus Colby Covington. What's also interesting, Abe Cowa, you know, you mentioned him earlier, came out and said that they were trying to book Masvidal versus Covington for that season of The Ultimate Fighter. Dana has come out and confirmed that that season of The Ultimate Fighter will definitely be two welterweight coaches. So, you know, you're in a situation now where, like you said, they want to run Usman and Masvidal in for June or July international fight, somewhere around there. Why not just book Leon versus Colby Covington for your season of The Ultimate Fighter?
Well, that would be very good. And it'd be good for the UK crowd as well, you know, to have another UK culture there. So it would definitely help with the viewing figures. I'm just disappointed it's not Covington and Masvidal.
Yeah.
Come on. That's the best season. Happen. That's the best season of The Ultimate Fighter. That's the best fight that they can do. No disrespect to anybody else. I'm just saying stylistically and their personalities and what they bring to the table and how much disdain they have for one another. That is the fight to do. I'm looking at the welterweight rankings.
And when you're talking about The Ultimate Fighter, I mean, you want explosive personalities. You want people that, you know, are going to have their people's eyes glued to the screen, and you want a real rivalry. Those two, I mean, holy shit, dude, they're two of the most enigmatic personalities. They have, you know, whether you like them or hate them, they have like this, you know, obviously they just have that it factor about them. And that's what The Ultimate Fighter, honestly, when's the last time we saw The Ultimate Fighter with two coaches that are that sort of big, with that sort of heated rivalry? I think that has to happen. And why not give Masvidal the title fight? Regardless, he could still do The Ultimate Fighter against Covington and those two could still fight. Why not?
Yeah, I'm sure it's just the way they do it. The coaches fight one another. You know, there's no point having 12 weeks of all that promotion, two guys going at one another on national TV in front of the entire world for 12 weeks and then not have them fight.
Well, they could. What I'm saying is, if let's say they're filming The Ultimate Fighter in May, it's not going to be done filming until June. You can still have Masvidal fight for the title in June, and whether he wins or loses, fight Covington for the title or for, sort of that spot.
Because when you film The Ultimate Fighter, he can't train for a world title fight and film The Ultimate Fighter at the same time. It's hard. Trust me, the schedule of filming The Ultimate Fighter is pretty relentless for the coaches. I went out there, I did it twice. You think it's going to be a walk in the park. You know, oh, shit, I'm coaching The Ultimate Fighter. This is going to be awesome. It's a lot of work. First of all, you're going to do two training sessions a day, right? Two hour sessions a day. So that's 4 hours gone. Then you're going to do, every 3 days, you're going to do a fight announcement. So everyone gets together, you do a fight announcement, you pick him, blah, 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 blah. Next day, you're going to do a weigh-in. So you're going to help your fucking fighter. You know, you're going to help your fighter. Maybe some of those guys on the team you love and you want to help them make weight. Maybe there's some guys that you don't love and you couldn't give a fuck, but you still got to be there and you got to help them make weight. That's a whole process. That takes a few hours. Then the next day you got the fight. Bear in mind, you're still going to do two training sessions a day. Then you're going to do what's called confessionals. You know, that's where you sit down in front of a camera and you talk about whatever incident happened. You know, Harrington threw a fucking cup of coffee in Lewis's face. And I was so shocked. You know what I mean? To get those reality TV segments. So you're going to do all the confessionals. You're going to do the training sessions, the weigh-ins, the fight announcements, the actual fight themselves. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of free time, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, you know what? I guess I stand corrected. I'm just an asshole.
No, it's called a conversation, Lewis. We're having a conversation. But all right, I'm just looking at the rankings here. Realistically, I mean, there isn't too many because once you get out of Kamaru the champ, Covington, Gilbert Burns just got beaten, Leon Edwards, of course, always the bridesmaid, never the bride at the moment. Then you got Masvidal, and then no disrespect to the rest of them, it kind of drops off. Stephen Thompson, awesome fighter. Last performance was the best fight of his life. Can't wait to see him fight again. But he doesn't tick the boxes in terms of those superstars and the big high-profile fights. Then you got Michael Chiesa on a roll right now, doing tremendous. Not going to tick those boxes. Tyron Woodley, he's got to come back. He's got a fight booked against Vicente Luque. And then from there, it goes, you know, Neil Magny, Vicente, Jeff Neal, yada, yada, yada. So,
yeah.
Limited options.
There are limited options at 170. I think Wonder Boy versus Chiesa is a good fight as well.
I like that fight.
Those two should fight next.
I would love to see. I'd like to see Wonder Boy fight Kamaru. I mean, he's not one of those guys that's going to talk shit and they haven't got beef and a backstory and all the rest of it. But just stylistically, I would love to see how Stephen Thompson could do against Kamaru. Be a very, very interesting stylistic matchup.
Thompson is the only guy in the top five who Usman has not beaten. And Tikias and Thompson are the only two in the top 10 that he hasn't beaten, which, yeah, really interesting. So you put those two against each other and maybe you have a contender on the other side of it. Both those guys are household names to UFC fans at this point, and Thompson's a former champion. I think Thompson, if he has another incredible performance like he did in his last performance, you know, just for the fact that he's a former champion and he's in the position he's at right now with Usman clearing out the rest of the division, I think he makes sense.
Let's start the Leon Edwards bandwagon right now. I'm sure there's already many, many, many going along. But Leon Edwards, hopefully, last time, you know, he's training for a fight and things like that, so time is hard. But he did say he's going to join us Thursday. And I think, honestly, I mean, Leon Edwards flying under the radar. Once he comes on this show Thursday and we hear what he's saying, we hear what he's got, we're going to expose him to the masses and he's going to be a fucking superstar.
I thought you were going to say, and I think Thursday he's actually going to show up this time.
I don't know if he is. I'll be honest. Last time he said, I'm good. Sorry, I'm at an Italian restaurant. I'm like, all right, fair enough. I get it, Leon. You're a very busy man. You got a fight to train for.
Kamaru, I think that, you know, it was an imperfect first round. I think I don't think he moved anywhere in terms of sort of his stock. I think, what do you think here? I think it was incredible for him to show, you know, how he would do against a little bit of adversity. Obviously, he's got a crazy chin. I mean, at one point, I think it was in the first round, he just took a fucking head kick, just took it on the chin and was like, that's it. Sorry, that didn't do anything to me. But I think that because he showed some holes in his game in that first round and showed that he can get hit and knocked down, I think that it probably put other people in the division sort of on notice as like, oh shit, you know, Kamaru is beatable. It's not a foregone conclusion that he can't be knocked out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Any one of his potential competitors probably saw that fight. And yes, he had a great round two and three and got the finish. But in round one, looked very beatable, you know. But that's more to do with what Gilbert did well than what Kamaru did wrong. Gilbert went out there, threw some fantastic shots and sat him down. But as you said, Masvidal, Covington, they're all looking at that. And they're saying, no, I'll say it one more time. Gilbert, after having such an amazing start, then chose to play the jiu-jitsu game and lying on his back. You know, this isn't Pride in 2003. Jiu-jitsu fighters shouldn't be doing that in modern mixed martial arts. I get it. He was in the moment, you know, a high-pressure situation. He thought, hold on, if I stay here, he's going to come down in my guard. But he was letting the fight slip away. And also, by that, he's allowing Kamaru to recover. He's allowing Kamaru to recover, to get his wherewithal, you know, get his faculties back. And then also, the confidence. Because now, not only, even though the start of the round started badly for Usman, it kind of ended well for Usman. You see what I'm saying? Him standing over him, him landing shots. And so then he's able to go back at the end of the first round and regroup, and his coach is saying, oh, it's okay, all right. He got off on you at the beginning, but look at that. Look how it turned around. You know what I'm saying? Did want to talk about something you just brought up. A lot of people talking about Kamaru Usman potentially being the greatest of all time and making comparisons to Georges St-Pierre. Of course, at the weekend, he extended his wins to 13 in a row, which is incredible. And the big news was, he's surpassed Georges St-Pierre's record of 12, which is, it's awesome. A 13-fight win streak in the UFC is incredible. But I could be getting these wrong, Harrington, but I think Georges St-Pierre had 12, but they were title defenses.
Yeah, so George's streak was it's the welterweight division streak, right? So Usman, they're counting from his first fight in the UFC. All 13 have been in the welterweight division. George's win streak currently is at 13 right now, but obviously one fight was 185. So that's why he made that jump over him. But as you said, George's came back. I think it was Matt Hughes in the first fight, and then a title for the interim title, and then every fight after that was either for the title or defending the belt. So, you know,
you said all of those things without actually giving me the crucial piece of info that I wanted.
What's that?
No, you're good, bud. How many title defenses?
I believe it was 11 total.
11. I mean, that's
either 10 or 11. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's mind blowing. I mean, Kamaru looked great, but I don't think it's fair. You know, I think it kind of discredits the body of work that George put in to be saying that just yet. Kamaru may go on to be that guy, but I think how many defenses now? Three? Or Colby Covington, he took the belt off Woodley, Covington, Masvidal, and Usman. Yeah, so it's three so far, which again is sensational. It's incredible.
I'll tell you, Kamaru, if you look at his record as well, he's got some really, really incredible, like his last six fights, they're all marquee fights. They're obviously the last few have been title fights. So he's on his way to doing that. It's very impressive what he's put together. But Georges St-Pierre, I mean, he just beat everybody. Everybody, he cleared out that division. It was crazy. Towards the end, it was like he looked so unbeatable. So I think it's pretty early to sort of talk about Kamaru the same way that we talk about George. But I will tell you right now, in the pound for pound discussion, I think Kamaru has to be right there.
Oh, 100%. And that's a good point, Lewis. You know, pound for pound, he has to be top three, top four for sure, if not even higher. But yeah, to your point, it's just too early for Kamaru. We're not saying that he couldn't go on to do that. As you said, as we said, Woodley, Covington, Masvidal, who was it the weekend? Gilbert Burns. Do you know what I mean? These are very, very tough competitions, the rightful number one contenders, and he's smoking them. And he's not making it look easy, but he's doing it in style. So, you know,
George
maybe
Saint-Pierre,
one day.
11 wins in title fights, 9 defenses. I mean, you have to understand that, like, he's fighting the absolute best fighter in the world every single time, preparing for that every single time, whereas Kamaru's been doing that a few times now. It's just a few times that he's been fighting the number one contender.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. So competition is higher for the longer amount of time for Kamaru. All right, moving on. But well done, Kamaru Usman. Well done, Gilbert Burns. I hope he gets a rematch. He said that he's still not giving up on his hopes and dreams of being a champion. And he's ready to fight.
From what you saw there, I mean, could he make the adjustment and become a world champion one day? Because he was close to stopping him in that first round.
Here's my advice to anybody, not even in a world title fight, in a fight, don't lie on the floor. It's the first thing he needs to do. Don't lie on your back, okay? I'm sorry, I love Gilbert Burns. I'm the biggest fan. But don't lie on the floor. And I think when he watches that back, he'll be like, ay, carayo, what is this shit? Why am I doing this? You know, he will. But still, we're not here to shit on him.
All right, Mike, let's take a moment and give a shout out to our good friend Bardia Helmi, who is a top MMA handicapper with a publicly tracked 70% winning record and his incredible service, Premier Fight Picks. I'll tell you right now, Bardia, he picks winners. If you're trying to gamble on the sport of MMA and you want some insight and some knowledge, I know you listen for Harrington's Insight. That's where that used to be the go-to for this show, but we have a brand new, more reliable source in Bardia Helmi.
If you're listening to Harrington for your picks, you're a goddamn fool. I'm just going to throw it out there. If you actually want to make some money, you want to put your money where your mouth is, you want to make the sport more exciting than what it already is, then Bardia Helmi. He has a fantastic track record. I think it's over 70%. Yeah. Bardia doesn't just pick favorites either. His record includes many big-time underdogs. For example, he just called Justin Gaethje over Tony Ferguson, and he's the one that predicted Volkanovski was going to beat Max Holloway. Bardia Helmi is a top MMA handicapper. As I said before, a publicly tracked 70% winning record, which is pretty high. You know what I mean? If you're winning 70% of the time, you know what you're talking about. So go out there, go to his website, check it out, which is premierfightpicks.com. See what the bets he's offering. And if it falls in line to what you're thinking, then, you know, you're further established by one of the best in the business, a guy that knows his onions, a guy that knows his picks and has a 70% winning track record. Therefore, if I see that, I'm doubling down on my bet, baby boy, and I'm going for more. So, premierfightpicks.com, with Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis fighting this weekend and a loaded 2021 schedule in front of us, it is the perfect time to sign up. Bardia is offering special weekly subscriptions for only $49.99, which gets you all of his bets, including the ones for this week. And I'm talking about Blaydes versus Lewis. So, one more time, if you're looking to bet on fights and you want a little help in picking the winners, guys, please visit PremierFightPicks.com. Okay, where were we? Notes. We discussed Leon Edwards, so that's number one.
I'll do plugs real quick while you pull up these notes.
No, I got it, but go ahead.
Real quick, you guys love the show. Go to our YouTube channel. Click subscribe, click the notification button. You get a notification every time another episode is going live on YouTube. You can also subscribe to our iTunes channel as well, or Google Play, Stitcher, really anywhere you can get a podcast, Spotify as well. You guys can download the Believe You Me podcast. Make sure you leave us a 5-star rating, positive review, wherever you can review it. That helps people find the show. And if you guys want access to the entire on-demand library, both ad-free and uncensored, gasdigitalnetwork.com is the website. Use the promo code BYM, get a 14-day free trial, and enjoy the entire on-demand library.
You got those notes in front of you, Lewis?
We'll
take turns, as it were. I will start at number two. Darren Till. This is funny. I actually reached out to Darren. He was going to come on. He was going to come on the show today, but I didn't just want Darren. I wanted Darren and Mike Perry. Darren Till and Mike Perry did a live together the other day. And basically, it was all in good nature, I think, but they were just talking mad shit to one another, talking about a fight. Yeah, go on, press play. Let's have a little second of it.
I'll make 170 this time, and I'll be fast.
Okay. Well, I'll come down to 170. After I beat Marvin Vettori's ass, I'll beat you.
Oh, yeah? What you playing? You know, Jeff Neal told me he's about 212, cuts 42 pounds to 170.
I'm 210 right now.
Yeah, so you can do it. I mean, I don't know what I asked for 185. If I show up and fight good at 170 and then say, give me the 85, we can see what we can do. But we could just fight for free like we did last time.
That was good, wasn't it?
A little play around. It
was good. I beat your ass, though, didn't I?
You got fat hips. You tripped me. I've pummeled your face a few times.
Lad, I've got love for you, but I fucking battered you. You're too small, I told you, you're tiny. How can you beat me? How?
How were you bleeding then? You would have won.
Stop yourself!
All right, thanks, Gary.
They're both great.
No, they are the characters for sure. I was led wherever I was the other day watching that. I was laughing my ass off. And then Darren Till just sent me a video as well talking shit because I commented on one of my old mates' Instagram posts and he sent me a video message like, lads, he's my fucking friend. Don't fucking comment, okay? Fuck off. Yeah, he's a good lad. I was going to get him on, but we want both on. We want them both on at the same time. We'll try and make that happen. That'll be funny. But still, Darren Till and Mike Perry, Perry debated who won their first sparring match. Yeah, they're great. It's awesome. I love it that they do that. I would like to see that fight after all the shit talk. Do you remember the, I think it was an embedded or something, and they were talking. You know how this all started, don't you? And it was like, Darren said, do you want to go spar? Or Mike Perry said, do you want to go spar? I forget which way around it was. And the other one thought they meant go to the spa and get a massage and stuff like that. But then you see the mix up that I'm trying to explain. Of course. It was funny. It was very funny. It was very funny.
Which is this the opposite, the polar opposite of sparring is spying.
Do you want to go spa? Yeah, I'll go spa. And then you think you're going to go and get a nice massage. The guy sticks his fucking boxing gloves on. Yeah, they're great. They're awesome. Paulo Costa, Robert Whittaker taped to lead UFC on ABC2 in the main event. But Costa says he's not willing to move up the 1 week from April 17th to April 10th. I never saw this, Harrington. This is the first time I'm seeing this. Do we have a reason?
No, I mean, Costa just stood firm. He said that he was preparing for that April 17th date, and his management said he was not willing to move up to the 10th. I mean, that would have been a massive jump up. It seems like they're really trying to make a stand with these big ABC cards, putting all the biggest non-pay-per-view fights on ABC proper. But Costa just didn't want to inconvenience himself by a week.
Well, that's 8 weeks out. So look, I understand it though, right? So you're on the cusp here. Depending, some people do, I'm assuming, an 8 week fight camp. Some people do a 12 week fight camp, Bisping. I've heard both.
Yeah, some people do an 8, some people do a 6. You know, you don't need 12. You only need 12 if you let yourself get really out of shape and they do what's called a pre-camp. You know, some boxers do that, and some MMA guys do that. They do a pre-camp to try and get their weight low in that pre-camp. So then, therefore, when you're actually in training camp, you focus on the fight. You're not focusing on the weight, because so many people, I've done it myself, the entire training camp becomes about getting on the scale and making weight. When the scale isn't your opponent, you've got to make weight. Then the next day you've got to fight somebody. So you've got to focus on that person. But still, 8 weeks is plenty of time. I don't understand that, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the difference between 8 and 7 weeks. Main event. No, who is it? Costa saying this, right?
Yeah, it's Costa. It's Costa. I mean, ABC being a main event on ABC, that's a massive opportunity. He's going to get a ton of eyeballs on him. The guy looks great. You know what I mean? A lot of women are going to see him with his shirt off, doing his fucking salsa hips, wearing his fucking silk shirts. You know, he's going to be on Dancing in the Stars in no time. And we're talking Dancing in the Stars USA, not that Brazil bullshit. Stars USA.
In effect, it's a number one contender fight because Whittaker is the true number one contender right now. So if Costa can beat him, you know, look, he didn't look great in his title fight.
Looked awful.
Luckily, Adesanya's cleared out the division, essentially. So
I'd rather Costa let on the floor like Gilbert Burns than fight the way he fought the first time. Harrington, show yourself, please. And you're going to make a point. No doubt it was a well put together, thoughtful point that you're reading off a computer. But I want to hear it.
Well, so Robert Whittaker said, you know, he's 100% ready. April 10th, April 17th, tomorrow, we are ready, in all caps on his Facebook page there. So it seems like he is he's not taking kindly to not getting that kind of ABC shine just because Paulo Costa doesn't want to man up. However, that card does have Darren Till versus Marvin Vettori. So it's likely those two are going to get the bump thanks to Costa not willing to show up for the fight.
Ah, God damn, that's the Darren Till one, yeah, yeah. So that's going to be on ABC. No, because I reached out to the UFC because I got all my bookings for the next few months. I was like, can I do the Darren Till fight? And they went, because I'm doing April 10th. They said, I said, oh, is that the Darren Till one? They went, no, that's the following week. But I forgot about it until then. Mm. Fuck, that's a shame. I'm looking forward to doing that one day. Costa, what are you doing, bud? 8 weeks, big opportunity. What, 1 week doesn't really matter. What do you think his motivation is there, Lewis?
I'm assuming it probably is just having the extra week. If he planned out mentally for 8 weeks, in his mind, he's going, fuck ABC. If I win, if I beat Robert Whittaker, I'm right there. I'm the rightful number one contender. It's not necessarily a title shot, but at the very least, he's the rightful guy and makes a real case for it. I'm assuming he just doesn't want to leave any stone unturned.
Devil's avocado.
Devil's avocado.
Devil's avocado. It could be a way of getting out of the fight without actually turning it down. I'm not saying he's doing that. I'm not saying he's doing that. Robert Whittaker is a tricky customer, has excellent movement, as long as he's not fighting Israel Adesanya. Usually has a lot of tremendous movement and footwork and takedowns and all the rest of it. Very elusive as well. And it's a tough fight. And Costa accepted it. And I'm only joking when I say that. But still, I just find it, I just don't understand. He's still got 8 weeks to this point. I mean, maybe he wanted to do 10 weeks. And certainly, after being undefeated and taking a bad loss like that and getting finished, he's like, okay, I can't afford to take any chances. So yeah, the more I'm talking about this, the more I'm starting to agree with him, because yeah, you don't want to go from being undefeated to getting two losses in a row and then being out of title discussions forever. You know what I mean? Right. So if in his mind, and no doubt there's a manager, no doubt there's a sports psychologist, there might be a nutritionist, the whole team in the background saying, no, we wanted 10 weeks and this gives you 8.
Yeah, he's also a very big 185 pounder, right? So he might need that extra time to take the weight off.
Yeah, maybe, you know. So, well, he's only hurting himself ultimately. You know, that's a massive opportunity if he could go out there and beat Robert Whittaker. I mean, all right, he's still
going to. Are they saying that the Whittaker fight's not going to happen if they're doing it on the 17th? Or is Robert Whittaker holding firm that he won't take the fight at the later date?
No. I don't know how to maybe come on. So it's just Costa saying he's not fighting on the 17th. So what are they going to do? You got any idea, Harrington? They're going to bring in somebody else for Whittaker or move the fight in totality?
No, so the fight was originally signed for the 17th. So they came to them when they said, hey, you know, now that we have this date where it's going to be on ABC instead of an ESPN Plus card, will you take a week earlier so that you guys can be on ABC? Whittaker said, of course. Costa said no. So they're going to stick to that April 17th date that they have booked right now. And like I was saying, it seems as though the headliner for April 10th now is going to be Vettori versus Till.
Yeah, well,
that's
I get
a fantastic
it.
Fight. No. I get that. Okay. Sorry, pardon me. I didn't realize that he still had the option to fight on the 17th. Okay, yeah. So basically it's a non-conversation, Harrington. Thank you. Give us something to talk about for 10 minutes. Said he's not fighting on the 17th or the 10th, pardon me. And they went, all right, we'll fight on the 17th. So, well, we are. We got contracts for it. Okay, jog on. You just don't get the exposure. Okay, well, that was a big load of
fucking. Do we know the numbers from the last ABC show?
We do not. I do not know. Maybe someone could do some research and find that out, but I have no idea what they were. But April 10th, ABC, Marvin Vettori taking on Darren Till. That's a banger of a fight. Harrington, what did you see?
Yeah, so it averaged, have it here, 1.22 million viewers, 0.72 rating in the all-important 18 to 49 demographic, peaked at 1.6 million, and that was against an NFL playoff game. So,
but what time of the day was that on the ABC
3 p.m. card?
Yeah, I would have thought that would have been a lot stronger, to be honest. I'm not saying they're bad numbers, but ABC in every bloody home in America, I would have thought that was way higher.
Afternoon against a playoff game. I mean, it's the same exact demographic. Yeah. People give a fuck about the playoff games. UFC fans really give a shit about football. I think that's actually, you know, about as good as I thought it would do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I've seen some of the shows, you know, but back in the day, Ultimate Fighter. I think my Ultimate Fighter finale had like 3.7 million viewers. You know what I mean?
Prime time. It was also at a time when we were so like mixed martial arts was so new, and you only get, you know, one big fight every couple months at the most.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, big difference in terms of supply and demand.
That's a really good point. It is a solid point, Lewis. Let's have a look. Done the Darren Till, done the Paulo Costa, UFC 258. Oh, yeah, this was cool. Did you know? You probably didn't notice if you only saw the main event.
That's another thing. Sorry to cut you off, Mike, but Harrington just also messaged the group, said so many fewer channels back then and no streaming options. That's the other side of it as well. It's like, how many people just say, oh, I'm going to just watch that later online? I wonder how much it cuts into the bottom line, because back then you couldn't watch Ultimate Fighter Finale online streaming later on. The only way you were watching it, dude, it wasn't that easy to stream shit back then.
No. Oh, yeah, back then. I'm talking about now. Sorry. I'm sorry. Now you can't really, I mean, you can go watch it later, but nobody wants to watch MMA later after the fight. We've had this conversation because you always know. You always know who's
But when
won
there's
it.
A playoff game on, for sure. I mean, I would assume that...
Then you just make your choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I would assume that there's a big, big difference. And look, the UFC has made a real effort to cut down on illegal streamers. That was a big story a week or two ago, right?
Yeah, a few weeks ago, yeah, Dana was going. Last time, the last pay-per-view on Fight Island. But yeah, 258 was the first time they used this new 8K camera. I'm sure that's not its official name. But did you see that, Lewis? It was cool.
No, I didn't. Or I probably did. I didn't notice it.
Yeah, so if you put your phone on portrait mode and you take a picture, and I forget what the technical camera term is, but you know when you're in focus, kind of like fucking our podcast, and everything else behind you is out of focus, is all that kind of a little bit blurry, and it looks very, very cool. Sometimes they would switch to a camera that had that effect, and I gotta give it to the UFC production crew. They're really taking this thing to the next level, because some of it looks so fucking cool. I mean, look at it there. Really?
So they incorporated portrait mode from everyone's iPhone. Good.
Yeah, well, I doubt it was that. And in fact, the camera cost $8,000. It's not called $8,000. I saw Zach Candido. He's one of the heads of production over there at the UFC. And yeah, he came and said, no, the 8K camera cost $8,000. That's why it was being referred to as that. I think I'm getting that right. It's not
it has to be way more than $8,000.
Well, that's what I thought, because some of those cameras, when you're on a movie set or whatever, some of those cameras are like $500,000.
Yeah.
On the Ultimate Fighter, some of those cameras are like $350,000. So yeah, I wouldn't... Maybe it was being sarcastic. I don't know, but still, it looked fucking awesome. When it was right, there was a couple of times it got a little bit blurry, and I only know that because I saw a few people complaining. But it's new technology, man. It's very cool how they continue to further the production.
Yeah, I think they do mean 8K, like the same way they mean 4K. Yeah. But look, the UFC is at the forefront of high quality production. I always notice this now that like I'm involved behind the scenes in terms of just producing my own shit, and like I just noticed little things like graphics, and just we have like lower thirds on this show where our names will come up with our, like, you know, our email addresses, or I should say our social media profiles. And then when you start to notice things like that, like the UFC, it's so nice. Like every package they have, like when somebody's name comes up, it's animated in a certain way, and there's little octagons that are spinning that you don't really notice unless you're really looking for it.
The another one that they've done lately is kind of new, maybe for a year or so. Have you seen it? It's awesome. How, for only on TV, obviously, but there's a hologram of the fighter above the crowd. So it shows the octagon. It's a wide shot. It shows the octagon and all the crowd. And then it has a hologram of the two fighters and then the tail of the tape. Have you seen that, where it's just like hologram?
No, I haven't.
No, dude, they've been doing that for ages. It's That's fucking awesome. Cool. The first time I saw that, I was like, wow, how do they do that? I'm sure it's a pretty basic, very expensive computer program. You know, but it looks really, you must have seen that. Harrington, tell me you've seen that. Somebody, Lewis, you know, you just sat there and said, I really pay attention to the production, all these little things, and you haven't seen that.
Harrington, please come in looking like a fucking hologram yourself.
Yeah, you do. What is going on?
Are you staring exclusively directly into blue light? What is going on with you?
I mean, that's just the setup we have in your studio, Lewis. So the most noticeable thing I saw was when Michael Chandler was walking out, you know, and he had the Iron Mike Chandler thing and that giant graphic behind him at the UFC 257 pay-per-view. I think those graphics were really, really special. And then as you were saying, it was the 8K effect on that camera using the Sony Master Lens that that kind of made Bruce all blurred out in the background and the fighter super duper focused and crisp in the foreground.
No, it really adds to it. It does. And they continue for the production to get better and better. And like back in the day, when Conor fought Khabib, for example, they had the dry ice. Did you see that? Remember that? All the dry ice came out. It just looks so badass. Yeah, they're really pushing the boat out. It's awesome.
The first time I went to a UFC, this is back in the day, UFC 71, Chuck Liddell versus Rampage Jackson. It was just how big the production was just like awesome. It gave me goosebumps. Back in the day, it was just they would have the Bob O'Reilly like intro package. If you go to, they still have it to this day. If you go to a UFC event live, they play Bob O'Reilly by
The Who.
Yeah. And they have this big epic trailer where it just goes sort of throughout the history of the UFC, all through their champions. And it's just a really badass highlight reel. And you watch it and it gives you goosebumps. The first time I saw it, I was like, wow, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Do you know who edited that together?
Michael Bisping.
No, I'd love to take credit for that. Listen, if I edited that together, I would have mentioned that before now. I wouldn't have saved it for 4 years in the podcast to say that. No, Sean Shelby, the actual, you know, the matchmaker. Yeah, he got a computer program, I think, for Christmas and started having a little fiddle around and did that. And I think I'm getting this correct. We were having dinner one night. He was telling me because I was saying the same thing. I said, wow, that's fucking badass. He said, I did that. I was like, no way. And then he showed it to Dana, I think. And they were like, holy shit, we got to use this. And then the cool thing is like every, you know, when the belts change hands or whatever, they update it and change it. The iconic moments and whatnot. Because I used to have a little fucking segment on there myself, but not anymore.
He got bumped out for fucking Kamaru.
Bumped out for fucking Gilbert Burns lying on the floor for a while. What else should we do? We've been going for about an hour 15 here. We got any other points we haven't got to? Harrington?
I know we have some questions, by the way.
Yeah, Bruce Buffer showed off a fancy new jacket. I mean, shout out Bruce, 25 years, but don't put Bruce's jacket in the notes, okay? I'm just going to say that. I mean, it was a great jacket. It stood out. It was very bright, but it was beautiful. Ryan Hall has been forced out of his matchup with Danny Ige next month due to a hip injury sustained in training. This now marks two straight fights that have been cancelled due to injury. Hall is now wrapping up his sixth year in the company and he's only had four fights, all wins. Yeah, that sucks. You're never going to get momentum. Kind of like Leon Edwards. Leon Edwards is putting it all together on a 8-fight win streak, but due to inactivity, he's not getting the rub from the company, from the public, from everybody, all the fans, the fan base. Because if you're not seen, and it's not Leon's fault, COVID happened and then there was a restriction on travel and then fucking Hamzat got COVID, all these type of things. But still, at the end of the day, it does affect your popularity. And Ryan Hall, you know, the way he fights is very, very unique, but it's very, very good to watch. And four fights in 6 years, I mean, how is the man even paying his bills?
Yeah, you have to... Yeah, you have to be more active than that. You know, MMA fans are just, it's sort of like, what have you done for me lately, right? And if you're, but it's also in a weird way, he's a couple fights away from being on the tip of everybody's tongues as well. So if you put together a 6-fight win streak, 7-fight win streak, then they'd start talking about you that way. And I don't think that they're necessarily highlighting the fact that it's been over the course of 4 years.
No. And listen, and all he has to do is come back and win a big fight and everybody remembers it. I can't remember his last fights off the top of my head. I have commentated a couple. He's very good. Traditionally goes out, gets the Imanari role and gets a heel hook or an ankle lock or a leg lock of some description. Very, very dangerous. But yeah, well, good luck. All the best. Stefan Struve retired. Are you familiar with the skyscraper?
Of course. Come on, Stefan Struve.
7 foot tall, I think he is. Yeah, he's retired due to health complications. If you remember back in the day, he retired early.
He had a heart condition.
He had a heart condition, exactly. But then he came back, God bless him. And yeah, more health complications. So I hope he gets well soon. I remember Stefan Struve tapping out a couple of my old training partners and a couple of my, my old jiu-jitsu instructor. And I take a lot of happiness from saying that now because fuck those guys. So Mario Sukata getting tapped out of a fucking Dutch kickboxer. Ooh, fuck you, Sukata. There you go. Boom.
Yeah, he does have a win over Stipe. That's right, Brian. Brian calls him the greatest heavyweight of all time in the little chat. Which big Struve fan in Brian.
Hey, listen, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, he is a big dude. I don't know if you've ever been in his presence, but it's one of those guys. It's like, holy shit. Like, I'm friends with Roy Hibbert, the former basketball player, three-time NBA All-Star. And I think he's 7'2", right? Excuse me. And I feel for the guy. If you're that tall, you're just like, I'm not going to say...
a freak?
I'm not going to say that everywhere you go, but we were in Toronto. We were doing some playline business. We were going to investor meetings, and we were, and Toronto's like a mini New York. It's a very, very built up, busy city. And we're walking through the main streets. And I swear to God, this is an exaggeration. Literally every person that walks by, after they walk past him, because I was behind him a few feet, just watching it. Every person, they walk past and then they just go, like that. They just mouth to themselves, fuck me. And then everywhere we go, and he's so like calm and patient with everybody. But I said to him, I said, this not get old. Literally every person that you encounter commenting on your height. You know what I mean? At some point he's going to say, all right, dude, I get it. Save your jokes. Yeah, how's the weather up there? All the rest of it. He's like, nah, man, I'm used to it. It's my life. I'm tall.
Especially if you are a gifted athlete, multimillionaire, you know, like at that point, you're like, you're only thanking your lucky stars. It would probably be annoying, but imagine the opposite. Imagine being short. There was a guy at my show the other night that was 5'2", 108 pounds.
And it's just like, 108 pounds, that's a small guy. I mean, I don't want to say the word, but what is they, what do you call it? Short people? What is the definition of a little person these days?
I think under 4'8 or something. What is the actual literal definition? He wasn't a little person. He was just a tiny dude.
I don't care whether that's a literal definition or not. That's a little person. That's a fucking, that's a small person.
He is a little person. And I never realized how much of a like a plight being short was for men. But if you ever, there's a Reddit called Bisping. If you want to just spend an hour just perusing the r/short subreddit, and it's a subreddit where it's just guys that are short. They're sort of like just giving each other tips on how to get chicks and just tips on how to get taller. It's the saddest thing I've ever read in my entire life.
I'm going to do it, and I can't wait because these little short guys, they've got the biggest fucking mouths always. The short guys are a pain in the fucking ass. And listen, I get it. I'm not surprised. Like Rebecca, you know, she only has eyes for me. But, you know, of course, like I can, we can appreciate the other sex. And she's like, nope, too short. If the person's short, if you're short, you're not stealing my wife. That's a fact. She's not interested in small guys.
That's a deal breaker for a lot of women.
Yeah, no, it is a deal breaker for a lot of women. So I understand they have the chip on their shoulder because they've had to deal with it their entire life, you know, from being at school or whatever. Probably people, you know, like, I don't know, just not picking on them, but just like little comments. Oh, shut up, little guy, whatever. Well, so you got to get quick with the chat.
So we're doing a picture at the end of the show, right? And there's another guy that was in the crowd, and he was in the crowd. They weren't together. They just happened to get in the same picture.
Like, yo, bro, you're short as well. It's like, yeah, what's up, dude?
Woo-hoo, no, dude, this guy was normal size. And in the middle of the picture, he picks up the short guy with one arm and holds him up. And his like legs were like kicking. And it was just like, if I'm the short guy, I'm like, dude, stop fucking patting me on the head. Don't pick me up. Don't make the fucking jokes. Those are the people who become school shooters.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. That's a bit extreme. You know, just because somebody gets treated like Scrappy Doo, they fucking might deserve it. Do you know what I mean? Because they got big fucking mouths. Dominic Cruz, there you go. Boom. Small, big fucking talker. A mate of mine, you know, same thing. Small, big fucking talker. Doesn't shut the fuck up when you just want to slap him, but you can't because they're too small. Because they're fucking tiny. So you lose every time. You can't argue with them. Right, because they're fucking fast talking little assholes, and then what they do is, even if you do argue and you start winning, then they call you out to a fight. And if you actually even entertain engaging with a short person or a little person, it's like they say, don't argue with a fool, because from a distance people can't tell who's who, you know, who the fool is, or you both look like fools. Same thing, don't argue with a little person, because it's a lose-lose situation. It really is.
Yeah, I don't know, as a fat guy, I would always like, just as a kid, I would have always rather be short than fat. But now, like, that I know what I know about the world, I would definitely rather be. At least you can lose weight. There's just no getting taller. Once you're grown, you're grown.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, would you rather be tall than fat? No, I'd rather be fat. I'd rather be fat, of course. Brian Harrington, let's go around the table here.
Brian's like 6'5". Brian's so tall.
Are you 6'5", Brian? All these years that I've known you, but I never knew that.
I'm 6'3".
6'3", fine head of hair. Ooh, you must be killing it up there in NYC.
Voice too.
Oh, you got the voice of God. Stop showing off, Brian, for fuck's sake. Give these mere mortals a chance. Brian Harrington.
Hey, I left my hair conditioner on the top shelf. Let me get it.
I don't know if I should ask Harrington this, one who's been a little bit short and a little bit plump, although you're looking better. But what would you rather be, a little bit taller or a little bit less plump?
I mean, I'm 170 right now, so I'm where I should be. So if I was like a few inches taller and a little bit fatter, I think that works perfectly for me.
Harrington, I just want to tell you this. You have a fat guy face. So you can sit here and talk all the shit about where you're supposed to be, but you have a jowl, you have a fat guy demeanor, you're sort of round and meatball-y. You're not where you need to be.
You're looking like a turtle these days. I'd bring the beard back. You look like a turtle. I saw a turtle that was 184 years old the other day on David Attenborough fan page on Instagram. And yeah, there's a striking resemblance to you. But 170, good for you, Harrington. Good job. All right, questions? We got some?
If you want to join the conversation, please shoot us an email, bympod@gmail.com. Video questions, audio questions, fan art. We love it all.
We do.
So we have this question from a New Zealand supporter named Kieran Wedge.
A New Zealand supporter? It was a football team now?
Well, I didn't want to call him a fan.
Well, no, sorry. That's what you meant. He's a supporter from New Zealand. I thought you meant the guy supports New Zealand. He's a New Zealand supporter. Sorry. Pardon me. All right. Good for you, Brian. Nice.
G'day, fellas. Kieran from New Zealand here. Big fan, blah, blah, blah. I have a two-part question. The first part, what is your most embarrassing sexual experience? I'm happy for you guys to go around the room on this one. Call in Brian and Harrington, and hopefully Shannon's filling in as well. Hmm. And no Harrington beating off in your mum's basement, getting caught, doesn't really count. Second part to this question, I know Michael Bisping will not answer this because he's a pussy. But if you end up, Rebecca ends up dying, how would you go around finding a new bird? Cheers, fellas.
Well, that's not a hard question to answer, pussy or not. By the way, New Zealand, fuck you. But most embarrassing sexual experience. I'll try and think of one. I'm not against saying one, but right now one's not coming to mind. Does anybody have an answer? Because he wants us to go around all four of us.
I sure do.
Ooh, this sounds like a good one.
So one time it was my birthday and I was working at a garage, and this girl I knew from years ago when we were a kid just drove in, and she was like, hey, I guess she was talking to me on social media. She was like, hey, it's your birthday. We're going to drink this bottle of Jameson when you get off of work. Great. That happened at like 10 in the morning. Throughout the day, I got super high and I ate sausage and peppers, a pint of chocolate ice cream, and like other fucking random nonsense. We got hammered. I'm hitting it from behind and my guts start gurgling. I spew the most disgusting smelling. Holy shit. Like, I'm embarrassed. I will never. Oh my God. I'll never.
Oh my God.
You threw up.
All over her back.
That's amazing.
Ran to the bathroom, and this girl was such a sweetheart. She was like, oh, can I help you? Whatever. And I'm like, no, get out.
My God.
That happened to me.
I mean, nobody can top that, I don't think. Harrington and Lewis, you guys got anything?
Well, the most hurtful thing that's ever happened to me during sex is a woman told me to put my shirt back on. That was a real low point and a real indicator that I needed to lose some weight. That really hurt. But probably the most embarrassing is I lost my virginity in a parking garage during gay pride parade. So I got
walked, some guy spewed all over your back.
Got walked in on by two lesbians as I was making love to my 18-year-old chick who took my virginity. It's great.
In your defense, though, Harrington, now 170, fine specimen of American beef. She wouldn't be saying that now, would she? She'd be all about it. She's probably begging for you to come back. Lewis?
No, she's done with me.
My most embarrassed I've ever been sexually was one time I hooked up with this chick who was, I mean, to this day, one of the most beautiful women that I've ever hooked up with. I'd had a thing for this chick for years and years. And it was, you know, whatever the buildup was, I was so attracted to her. I'd never been nervous hooking up with a chick ever in my life. But yeah, we went to go bang and it just wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. And it was, she's gorgeous, just a fucking absolute dime piece. And I remember at one point she's blowing me and she looks up to me and it's flaccid in her hand. She's like, is it me? And I was like, no. And that was it. We never hooked up again. It was just something. It was fucking, as I'm talking about it right now, I'm cringing and I regret. I could have had Blue Chew. There were so many other answers that I could have used to fix this.
No, there's gas station sex pills for sure all over the place. Okay, so I don't want to sit here and be the only one that doesn't. And that's not bad, Lewis. That's not bad. You know what I mean? We've all been there. We've all had those days.
Doggy, it was the hottest chick at the time that I'd ever been
with. Yeah, that is bad, actually. I forgot about that part of it. I just thought a random, you can't get it up. We've all been there. But
No.
You manage to, you hit it with your charm. You give it all your best lines. You get it back to your place. You think, woo, let's go. And then, malfunction.
It was, dude, I even thinking about it now, it's making me sad. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. I kind of want to see a picture of her, see what she looks like.
I'll send you a picture. It's fucking wild. Ooh.
Yeah, so I don't want to be the only one that not gives one, because that would be lame. And it'd be like, oh, yeah, he thinks he's so great, he can't have an embarrassing experience. But I'll be honest, one doesn't spring to mind.
You've been crushing puss since you were a kid.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm just like, I certainly haven't thrown up all over a partner. Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay. I've maybe not been able to get it up on occasion here and there. A lot of medication, all these surgeries that you go through. Do you know what I'm saying? So it can affect your performance in that regard. But again, that's not like the most embarrassing. I guess when I tried to lose my virginity, I didn't know what I was doing. And I think she did, the little hussy that she was, because I didn't know and I was trying to put it in. And I think I was between her ass and the mattress and I was fucking that. And I'm like, is it in? She's like, is it in? And she looked at me. She's like, oh my God, this guy is fucking useless. She said, no, it's not in. That's about it. I can't think of anything. If anything comes to mind, I'll have it on standby for next week. But nothing too adventurous in the old bedroom department, unfortunately.
You've also been with your wife since you were basically a kid, so you don't have like all of those random hookup stories.
Yeah, no, I'm not going on dating experiences and, on Tinder and all that stuff. And then, you meet up with someone and someone's a psycho, because I guarantee there's a lot of funny stories you can have with those.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to be back with another show on Thursday. Until then, be well. Look after yourselves. Hopefully, Leon Edwards is going to join us on Thursday. I'll shoot him another message in a minute, because I do want to talk to Leon. I do want to, because he is fired up. He is pissed off, and rightly so. So no doubt he's got a lot to say. So he'd be a great guest to have on. And failing that, we're going to try and get Mike Perry, Darren Till. We're going to get some good guests. But until then, Lewis, I hope you get out of Texas, buddy.
All right, me too. Thanks for watching, guys. See you Thursday.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.